Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. If you're an avid public radio listener, you're likely familiar with StoryCorps or the Moth Radio Hour, in which people tell their own true stories live on stage. Imagine if the focus was on illness or a discussion of relationships between, say, parents and children or between a doctor and her patient. That's the premise of Health Story Collaborative, founded in 2013 by my guest today, Dr. Annie Brewster. Diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2001, Brewster spent the first 5 years in total denial until her love of narrative gradually opened her mind to sharing her diagnosis more widely. In 2009, she broke a taboo by sharing her diagnosis with a patient right in front of her who was diagnosed with the same chronic condition, MS. Her sharing led to a radio piece for public radio station WBUR in Boston, which was then picked up by the New York Times, and the seeds for Health Story Collaborative were planted, based on the premise that storytelling not only brings community, but promotes healing. Her new book, co-authored with Rachel Zimmerman, is The Healing Power of Storytelling: Using Personal Narrative to Navigate Illness, Trauma, and Loss. Annie Brewster, internal medicine physician and founder and executive director of the Health Story Collaborative, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Annie Brewster, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by just having you tell us, what is the healing power of storytelling? What do you mean by that?
Thank you so much for having me, first of all. That's a big question. For me, the short version is that storytelling is integral to our identities, and it helped me personally to integrate a diagnosis into my life and move forward. And I think that is the role that it can play, is helping us integrate challenging experiences, trauma, loss, illness, whatever it is, into our lives, into our sense of self. And that is essential for healing and for moving forward in a positive way.
And so you recommend essentially to this book to both patients and to providers for people to tell their stories, to dig in and to I think, get comfortable with truth and to share their narratives. And I guess I'm wondering, and you have a nice chapter on this, what is the evidence that storytelling has actual health benefits?
Yeah, so there's a lot of evidence actually out there. I was lucky enough to, early on in my work with Health Story Collaborative in 2012, connect with John Adler, who's a psychologist and now is the chief academic officer of Health Story Collaborative, really has been since the outset. And so most of our work is grounded in his research. He is in the field of identity psychology. He studies narrative psychology. And really the central premise of that is that our identity, who we are, is shaped by the stories we tell about ourselves, how we make sense of what happens to us reflected in the stories we tell about ourselves. So that, you know, in order to integrate our sense of self, we have to take all of our experiences and create some sort of internalized narrative that is continually changing, because in every given moment, we are sort of recreating our sense of self, looking back at our, you know, our recalled past, our perceived present time, and our imagined future. And we're sort of creating an identity out of those moments. So narrative identity is really the central concept. And what really gives me hope is that it is not something that is stagnant. It's something that we can continually change. And that, as John Adler would say, we are both the main character in our stories, but we're also the narrators of our stories. So how we tell them, how we choose to remember them, we have some control over that process. And that's not to say that they're not grounded in reality, but that we can make meaning as we choose to make meaning. And so it's this concept of narrative identity that really grounds the work. And it turns out that this identity, the story of self that we tell, it's really based on our memories of our lives, but it tends not to be, well, obviously it's not every little thing that happens to us, because we couldn't possibly remember that, but it tends to be sort of the turning point moments that form the scaffolding of this identity. So it's the high points, it's the low points, and it's the turning points. And so we sort of shape our identity around those big moments. And of course, getting a diagnosis is one of those big moments. That's the sort of the main concept. Then there is a lot of research on the fact that how we tell our stories matters when it comes to our health. So it is not all stories are equal when it comes to psychological health in particular. And Dr. Adler's work is really on this, more focused on mental health. And so it turns out that as we tell stories, it's not so much the events or the content of what happens to us in the stories, but it's the themes that show up in the stories that are linked to mental health, and especially positive mental health. So I'll stop there. I'll tell you about the themes if you want, because I think that that's a lot what we're pulling for when we're working with people to tell their stories. But I don't want to get too far into it if you want to redirect me somehow.
Well, that's kind of you. So yeah, I guess I was particularly interested in both how it seems to buffet both mental health and physical health, such that we often categorize them differently. But of course, we do know that it is really the same thing. But I was struck by this concept of agency or communion. I mean, just to name a couple when it talking about how storytelling improves mental health, I guess, could you expand on maybe those two?
Absolutely. So the narrative themes, I'll just name the ones that there are many narrative themes, but the ones that are most closely linked to positive mental health are agency, communion, redemption, and then one called accommodative processing, which I think is really important. So I'd love to talk about that a little bit. And then coherence, just sort of that's more about the structure of the story. And all of those things have been linked to positive mental health. So agency is really elements of feeling in charge of our stories, that we're not just being batted around by fate, that things aren't just happening to us. So it turns out the more that these themes of agency show up in a narrative, the better the mental health of the person. And, you know, one study that John Adler did that I found very interesting was to follow patients in psychotherapy over, I think it was 12 weeks. And they wrote a narrative at the beginning, and they also did a mental health assessment at the beginning and then after each session. And what they found over that time period is that they saw increases in agency in the narratives before they saw improvements in mental health. But there was obviously that correlation, but because the agency came first, that's sort of the best study out there that shows that it's actually could be causative. So agency is something that we're always helping people when we work with people to craft their narratives, and we're always helping them to identify the agency that's already there in their stories, but also helping them to explore and find new agency as they craft their narratives. And then communion is another big one, and that's really about connection and community, being connected to others. And so again, the more that shows up or themes of communion show up in the stories, the better the mental health. So again, we're helping people to identify the connections and the community they have, but also in the process of just telling and sharing stories, we build more community and therefore more communion. And then redemption is basically, as it is true, I think as a culture, we're very obsessed with redemption. Not everything is redemptive, but I do think that we can always find redemptive threads in a story. So even if someone is terminally ill, there are still redemptive threads. Maybe that's healing relationships, saying things you haven't said before, whatever it is. And so the opposite of that, interestingly, is called contamination. And that's when things in a story like start good and then turn bad. And that's actually bad for our mental health. So we don't push too hard for everything to be redemptive, but we are helping people to find those redemptive threads. And then this accommodative processing, I think, is really interesting because really it's about meaning making. And when it comes to well-being, there are sort of two types of well-being. There's the eudaimonic, which is more the meaning-making, and there's what's called hedonic, which is more like pleasure-seeking. And this accommodative processing is more this meaning-making piece. So when something happens to us, we can either go through the process of what's called assimilative processing, where we just kind of fold it into our existing story because it's not a big thing, we just carry on. Or when something big happens to us, we have to go through this accommodative processing. So we actually have to rejigger our stories. We have to retell them. And that's actually really good for us. And it's essential for our well-being. So I say that's really important because I don't want people to think we're just like plugging for just redemption or the silver linings. No, in fact, you have to sort of dig into what's hard. That's part of the process. And meaning making is really key there.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Annie Brewster. She is the founder and executive director of Health Story Collaborative. And she has just released a new book called The Healing Power of Storytelling, Using Personal Narrative to Navigate Illness, Trauma, and Loss. And she's co-authored that book with Rachel Zimmerman. And Annie Brewster is a general internist who practices urgent care. affiliated with Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. And Annie, tell us, the Health Story Collaborative, really, you founded it, you started it, and it all started with your own illness, which you're very open about. Can you tell our listeners about what happened to you and what you live with today?
Sure. So, you know, it was in my medical training, so I was actually an intern at the time in 2001, when I got a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. I did not accept it at that point. I'll say that it really took me about 5 years. So the way it played out, you know, I was super busy. I had a ton going on in my life, obviously, as an intern. I was actually going through a divorce. So I had a lot going on, and I started to have a tingling in my feet, and then it just kept climbing. And it was sort of like a numbness tingling that ascended all the way up my legs to my sort of belly button. And I ignored it for a really long time until I really couldn't anymore. And then ended up seeing a primary care doctor, went down the track of getting referred to a neurologist, getting an MRI, getting a lumbar puncture, spinal tap. And it all pointed towards some sort of demyelinating process, which is multiple sclerosis. It breaks down sort of the myelin sheath or the covering on the nerves. And I only had one lesion that they saw in my spinal cord at that time. So anyway, I went to a neurologist. I had not the best experience because I waited for a really long time. I was then in his office for a very short time. He was very certain that I had MS. I was not so certain because I only had the one lesion. And I feel like because there wasn't any time to really talk about me as a person, like I didn't feel like he understood me and knew me. And it was too rushed and it was like too thrown at me. And it was my responsibility, of course, more than anyone's, but I couldn't really take it in like that. I really needed like a little room for maybe, and there was no room for that. And he wanted to put me on medicine right away. Anyway, I left that office and then I really like was in denial for a long time. And so it was really storytelling that helped me come out of that denial. So that was sort of the first experience I had understanding that storytelling is powerful and potentially healing. So I started to realize that getting a diagnosis like this can like really change your identity. And as a physician who, you know, was in training at that time and had certainly done a lot of patient care, I never really understood that. You know, we sometimes are like detectives in medicine. We're supposed to come up with the diagnosis. And then we kind of feel like sometimes our story, you know, the story's over. We set forth a plan for the patient, done. And when I was the one getting the diagnosis, I realized, wow, like there's a, the story is just beginning and it's a really long process of how do you integrate this into your life. And I lived in like silence for a long time, just telling people really close to me. I felt really ashamed. I felt kind of broken and flawed. And it took me a really long time to come to terms with it. And so in that time of coming to terms with it, I started to crave stories. I found that I really wanted to listen to stories of other people. I didn't feel like I was ready to go to a support group because I was too afraid. I just didn't feel like I had embraced the identity enough to like step into a support group and say, I have MS. I was still sort of in denial, but I wanted to hear stories of other people living with chronic illness and moving forward, not necessarily with cure, but with some sort of hope, some sort of possibility that they could have a life. And I looked for those stories and I couldn't really find sort of the true narrative arc, honest, authentic stories that I was looking for. So I started to sort of think then, like maybe I could start collecting stories, not from people with MS, but maybe I could, you know, as a doctor, help my patients more that way by making a library of stories like the ones I'm craving. So that was one idea. And then at the same time, I started to sort of share my story more openly over time and eventually ended up writing about it and putting it out there in the public and found that very healing to actually engage with my narrative and then to share it. So it was sort of those two angles that led me to Health Story Collaborative because I saw that, you know, the listening was healing, but also the telling, going through the process of thinking about my own story, putting it together, putting it down on paper and then sharing it really, really helped me to move forward and step into myself as someone with MS. So yeah, so it was really that. And then, you know, the other side of it was sort of my life as a doctor and realizing what was wrong with, well, what I felt was flawed in the medical system, which is not enough time with the patients. I worked in primary care at the time and just always felt like I wasn't taking care of my patients the way that I really wanted to because I was so time compressed and I didn't have, because of the structure of the system, and couldn't really engage with them in the way that I wanted to hear their stories. And I realized once I was a patient that, geez, I really would have liked to have more time with my doctors like that. So it was sort of a, let's step outside of the exam room and create a space for story exchange with the intent of healing around illness. And so that's how it came to be.
I think I want to point out one really interesting feature, which is that you describe how you decided to go public, as it were, about your own diagnosis. And if I recall correctly, you were able to, with the help of a public radio station, WBUR, sort of go public with a radio essay or some kind of interview that in which you revealed. But what was the critical moment, I think, or the storytelling hook was that you talk about how you sort of violated, like, what we thought of, I guess, at the time, or sometimes still think of as a sacrosanct prohibition against revealing personal details to patients. And you met not necessarily a mirror image, but a patient just in an urgent care setting, and you had to give her the diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. And I guess she probably, no doubt, seemed bewildered. And you said, well, I have multiple sclerosis. And you just sort of shared and revealed in that powerful moment. You said, I didn't really do anything for her other than share my story. And I guess it was sort of a one-off, and she went back to wherever she came from. I think she was out of state. And if that moment hadn't have occurred, do you think that you would have gone on this pathway? Or how important was that? Or do you think you would have gotten there anyway? Because that was really a seminal moment.
Yeah, it was a seminal moment. I don't know. I think maybe I would have gotten here anyway, but I do think that really helped me to recognize that there was power in my story and that I could help others by sharing my story. And so for me, that was, you know, that is finding agency right there. That is redemption right there, to recognize, okay, here's what I've lived through, and actually it can help someone else. And that was powerful for me. It is an interesting thing in healthcare, right? Because it's sort of taboo to share personal information with our patients. And I will say, I very much am a proponent of boundaries. I don't think we need to burden our patients with our problems ever. But I do think there is a time and a place for sharing like that. And I will say, like, since I've been a patient, I think I've become less boundaried as a doctor. I'm still boundaried. I still think about it and the appropriateness, and I'm not going to burden anyone. But I'm more willing to sort of share a bit of myself as a human being. And I have learned, like, I love that from my doctors when they give a little, you know, tell me about their families, or it just makes it feel more human. But in this moment, I guess I really did identify with her because she was young. She was younger than I was, 31 or 32 when I was diagnosed. She was 21, I think. She was quite young. And she really was devastated that this was like a tragedy, and that her life was basically ruined, that she'd never have kids, she'd never be able to work, et cetera, et cetera. And so in that moment, and I don't even remember thinking about it consciously, but it just felt like the right thing to do, to say, hey, like, you know, there is hope. Not that I'm perfect, but that I'm still here and I'm working, and it's a challenge, and we don't know how your path will unfold, but there is room for hope. And that really, I think, did help her. But not everyone agrees with that boundary crossing.
Well, it seems like it was an important moment for her, just to realize that there was hope on the other side of that visit or that exam table. And Annie, I want to ask you about Health Story Collaborative. This is now a nonprofit that you started going back, well, now, I guess, more than 10 years or so. And how does it work? In other words, do patients sort of come to you or go on the website and just submit stories? Or do you try to recruit a cadre of providers who are interested in this kind of work, who then, you know, encourage patients to share stories, or, of course, providers share stories too, and there are caveats for providers? Share with us sort of how it works mechanically.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the beginning, we had more of an audio library, and that was our primary program. And those were aired on the public radio station in Boston at the time. And I was doing most of the audio editing and all of the interviewing. And we built that library up. We've been doing less of that just because that's more time consuming. But we do still some of that. And we do have a large audio library on our website. We also have a blog. So we're constantly putting on online material up. But our two main programs right now, I'd say, are more in-person programs. Of course, that's shifted a bit with COVID, but we've been taking them virtual. One is called Healing Story Sessions. And so this is a program where we have live events, or live virtual as it is now, where we usually on a given evening will have two storytellers. and they could know each other. They could have the same diagnosis. They could not know each other. Often there's a theme. So maybe it's parenting with chronic illness, or maybe it's a particular type of cancer, whatever it is. And we work with people who are sharing at these events pretty extensively beforehand. So over a period of at least 6 weeks, and we go through numerous drafts. So we have a narrative guide that we've crafted based on the research of what we know is good for us in storytelling with prompts. And the book has all of these prompts. And so we guide people through this process of writing. And as we go, we go through a number of edits, and we're always keeping our eye out for these themes that I talked about earlier, the agency, communion, redemption, accommodative processing, and coherence. And we're trying to pull for those by the questions we ask, asking them to just dig a little deeper. Like, the key is it has to be their authentic story, but we are always trying to explore for those themes and expand. And then we have an event where they share live with an audience, or live virtual. So that's one of our main programs. One of the interesting models in there that we have is a patient provider model. So some of the time we'll have a patient and a provider who are in a therapeutic relationship already as patient and provider, and we work with them each separately, and we have a different narrative guide for patients and a different one for providers. And they both write their stories about their relationship, but also more broadly about the diagnosis, and for the provider about their life and how they came to medicine. And then they share side by side, having never heard each other's story. And it's really powerful, but yet it's another example of sort of playing with those boundaries. And it makes some people uncomfortable. Of course, we do it in a very contained way. I'd say 99% of people don't feel uncomfortable, but there's always, you know, there are people who, having a provider stand up there and tell personal stories, makes them uncomfortable. But we do it in a way that we're editing these in advance. It's very contained and safe, and we're not crossing boundaries in an overly aggressive way. But it's really powerful to see the patient and the provider. And really the goal there is to strengthen that patient-provider bond, really humanize both of their perspectives. And that's something, like, when I came out of primary care, feeling like what made me saddest was that the system sort of sets up like an antagonism between patient and provider sometimes, because the patients aren't really getting what they want because they're rushed, and the doctors are stressed and feeling really rushed and time, you know, so it's just, sometimes we can feel like we're working at odds, even though we're on the same team. And so this is really, I think, healing. And then they carry that into their therapeutic relationship going forward. So that's one model. The healing story sessions is one of our main programs. And then the other is what we've been focused on since 2016, is around the opioid epidemic. So that's called the Opioid Project, Changing Perceptions Through Art and Storytelling. And in that one, I work with a visual artist, and we run workshops, and we have stories that we audio record, and they also collage and make art with her. And there are people in recovery, there are people who've lost a loved one to overdose. It's all around decreasing stigma around the epidemic and trying to use storytelling to heal. Those are our main focuses right now.
That was one of the many things I learned from the book, which is that and you talk about yourself as someone who likes the written word or oral dialogue and presentation, but how you stretched your own boundaries, but you came across folks who, for many reasons, are just primarily visual communicators, or may in fact have a medical condition that prevents them from speaking or writing. And so they are able to express themselves through art or painting. And so that, in fact, is you know, a real broadening of Health Story Collaborative into sort of different media. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's been really, I have to say, I've loved working with the artist, because it is a different way of thinking. And in the Opioid Project, you know, the culminating result of these workshops that we do is that we have community art shows where we have paired the audio clips, which people can use a QR code to listen on their phone, look at the art, and also read the artist's description of the art. So there are lots of different entry points for people who process things differently. It can be visual, it can be listening to the story, it can be reading, it can be all of them. But also, yes, you're right, like, people tell stories in different ways. And, you know, it's interesting because John Adler, who is a psychologist, the narrative psychologist I work with very closely, he would say it has to go through some sort of narrative phase. Many artists don't agree with that, but he would say, based on the research that he does, that yes, you can tell a story through a piece of visual art, but you have some sort of narrative construction of that story in your head. But some artists say that's not true. It just comes out on the paper. Anyway, I don't know, but I think there are people just communicate differently.
You know, Annie, it strikes me that your co-author on the book, The Healing Power of Storytelling, is Rachel Zimmerman, who used to be a reporter / host at WBUR. And then, of course, you have an afterword or an epilogue that's written by Robin Young, who many listeners will know as a co-host of the program Here and Now. So there's a lot of public radio infused through the work and through this book. I guess, how did that relationship develop, and how important has public radio, I guess, been to you and your work?
Public radio was so essential to getting me going in my work. I was very lucky early on when I first started recording stories and editing them to have a connection with WBUR in Boston, where they, through the Common Health blog, and Rachel Zimmerman, my co-author, was one of the co-founders of the Common Health blog and was working there at the time, would run those stories. And that really gave them a platform that was essential. So public radio has been wonderful. And I've written for them a lot as well, and done the audio pieces for them. And so Rachel and I have known each other through that connection since then, and had worked together as writer and editor in that capacity in the past. And so it was really a natural fit. And then Rachel had her own personal experience that led her to share her story with me over a year where we recorded. It wasn't sort of a classic way that we do the programming at Health Story Collaborative, but her husband had died by suicide and she was in the process of grief. And we decided to sort of capture grief over time just by meeting once a week and recording her story. And she's actually working on a memoir based on all those recordings now. But so she sort of gets it because she went through that whole process of seeing how her story changed over time and how important it was for her to think about her story, to share it, to put it out there. And so, yeah, so it was a wonderful fit. And then Rachel had worked with Robin Young, and that is the connection there. So yeah, public radio, I'm a huge fan, and they really were essential.
Well, the name of the book is The Healing Power of Storytelling, Using Personal Narrative to Navigate Illness, Trauma, and Loss. And it's written by my guest today, Annie Brewster, who is the founder and executive director of Health Story Collaborative. And Annie, congratulations. You have built something so beautiful that is impacting so many lives and making the world really a better place, and teaching us, I think, all that there is hope in suffering and illness, and really in communion, as you say, because as you point out in the book, you know, no less than the Surgeon General Vivek Murthy has pointed out our epidemic of loneliness. And so illness, I think, pushes many of us to feel alone. And so thank you for your work.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I really think the community aspect of it is huge because, you know, working on your personal narrative alone is in and of itself healing. And people always ask, do I have to share it for it to be healing? No. And in the book, there are lots of prompts and you could work through those on your own. But I do think there's an added benefit to sort of sharing in community. And I think that is really therapeutic to bring people together, to be vulnerable together, because ultimately that gives us strength.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Annie Brewster is an internal medicine physician in Boston and founder and executive director of Health Story Collaborative. Her new book is The Healing Power of Storytelling. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.